Hey, this is Logan Olson.
And this is Ben Jaley.
And I'm Rob Auten.
Rob is our guest, and this is To the Fucking Future.
Yeah!
Hey, everybody. Hey, Rob.
This is the fourth episode.
Maybe the fifth, maybe the second. I
think there was a zero episode. It depends on whether we throw the first one out.
Should that not be called episode zero?
There was actually a negative.
Episode zero, it feels hip as shit. Just name your first one episode zero. It's like everyone's just like, these guys are badass. They got an episode zero.
Well, is it cooler to be zero episode or episode zero?
I think episode zero.
I kind of think so, too.
You kind of get that nice...
It's very DC Comics flair kind of
thing.
Yeah,
or like a romance language, like adjective after the verb.
So you kind of hinted at there for a second. Rob, what do you do?
I write video games.
And what video games have you written before? And please, let's do the deep cuts, because I think there's probably some gems in addition to your AAA title.
Well, no. I mean, I think let's just go with Worked On. Because there's certainly better things to talk about of games I've worked on.
Before you do that, let's maybe say the big one first, and then that way you have some respect for as you talk about the ones you worked on.
I don't know. I think we should start talking about we should like start with Jumper, right?
Jumper, which is was
Jumper Griffin's story, the movie, the game.
In one of the lists, it was in the top 10 worst games, licensed video games ever made, right? Like on IGN.
It's actually not that bad. I mean, if you can forgive a few, if you can forgive a couple game ending, like game crippling bugs, game crashing bugs, and sort of a really weird core mechanic that's imaginative, but it has nothing to do with actually the way that combat works in the movie. It's okay. It's not terrible.
That's actually where I met you, arguably.
Inside Jumper, the
Inside Jumper,
story,
the movie, the game.
Yeah.
Yes. That was a lot of caveats for a really like lukewarm endorsement of the game.
I mean, you know.
These seven things disregarded,
it's not like you have to plug that game anymore. It's 5 years old.
Somebody was looking at my Xbox achievement. They're like, dude, you didn't finish Jumper? I thought you worked on that. And I was like, well, I hit the game. Like, I hit the crash bug. And I have a save in like a place where I can't leave. Like, I literally can't finish the game. Or, I mean, I could start it over, but I'm not going to. I mean, it's only like 90 minutes long, too.
So, Jumper.
Yeah.
And then?
So, most recently, to answer your question, I worked on a game called Gears of War Judgment, which came out last Tuesday from Microsoft and Epic and People Can Fly. I'm used to doing press, so you can tell.
Just for the record, Gears of War Judgment is Gears of War 3.
Judgment. No, it's Gears of War. I mean, it is the fourth title.
It's the fourth title
in the Gears of War
series. But
it's the full
title. It's not like you made the DLC pack.
Jesus,
Judgment isn't a DLC
pack. You sound
pack.
Like every loser on the internet right now.
It's like a real game, right?
It's a $60 fucking game.
I'm just really proud that
it costs $60.
I'm just really proud of you.
There are hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of entertainment in this video game.
I'm just really proud of you. I feel like this, you know, it's like...
You're proud of me.
Yeah, I'm just really like, wow,
From Jumper to Judgment, the Rob Auten story.
I just think you've
done really... Logan's Pride, the Rob Auten story.
I'm just really proud of you.
Thank you. You're going to cry.
So anyways, Rob, you're an expert in story video game writing.
I'm an acknowledged expert in story and video game writing.
So I thought we'd talk about the future of story and the future of writing. vaguely in regards to video games.
Okay,
does that sound
cool.
good?
We could try to couple it around the video game trolley, sure.
Yeah, but you've worked on movies, and so you're literate across multiple mediums. It's arguable that you're transmedia.
Movies,
you're a transmedia
movies
writer.
You said multiple medias, and then you didn't just say multimedia. You were like transmedia.
Movies will become holograms. Fish will become dolphins. What do you? I mean, you know, the future. I actually have like a whole personal platform. You want me to talk about it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm curious what you guys think. So I think if you look carefully at like what let's say you look at like Left 4 Dead, you look at like TF2, and you know Valve has this system. And I actually met the guy who kind of coded it last week at GDC. Yeah, seriously. Are you snoring?
No. I was belching, and I was trying to be like, oh, before.
Oh,
you burp,
I thought
away from the mic.
I'm a little
paranoid. This is great.
About
Keep
this.
Going.
So they have this system basically where, and this dude gave this amazing talk about GDC last year, and it's basically like the future of video game storytelling is systems, basically, and it's systems where, like, so there's data coming in about the player state from the game. So I have high health, I have low ammo, right? So, and I'm in combat. So when I do something like pick up an ammo box, let's just say we're talking about shooters because whatever. I mean, there's obviously this can be used for a lot of other things, but the metaphors are easier. So if I pick up ammo when I have, let's say, low health and low ammo, and I'm in combat, and there's, you know, there's a monster very close, you want to have a line fire that like acknowledges the situation of the player, which is that you have a character who has low health and low ammo. Like you're fucked, right? So you want a line that's like, oh, I needed that or something better. When you pick up this thing that may enable you not to die and continue in the game. And so that's currently, other than in a couple of Valve titles, not something that the industry is doing. For the most part, like when we were writing Gears, and it's Gears, they know what they're doing with engines and technologies, and they could do this, I think, very quickly. But, we would have long lists of, 50 lines for each character or 20 lines for each character when you pick up ammo or when you switch guns or all these things, and they just fire randomly. And we realized midway through the process that, actually having a system where the experience of, relief and the emotion and all the kind of constituent things that would happen to a real soldier in a battlefield type environment could actually, given the data of what that soldier is doing and feeling and the status and all the HUD shit, could actually fire a procedurally generated dialogue system. So this isn't even a story thing. This is just making
the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, it's making your combat experience a story, your player character's combat experience, a story that fits in with your combat experience.
Right.
So as a writer and as designers, we are sort of sitting there next to you, sort of holding your hand and, saying you just scrape through something. You want your character to be like, dude, oh, God, I almost like, when you're like, right, like everything's super red, you're about to die and you kill that last monster, the monster falls and you're like, oh. Your character never says like, shit, that was close, even
right.
though it was.
So it's like, yeah, well, fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which gets really old really, really fast.
So it really sounds like what you're talking about is the system underscoring the situation.
The gameplay itself, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that opens up, because there's the ability to kind of tell a more quiet and, meandering and, character-driven, you can get information about characters in a more quiet way, an atmospheric way. From the way that they express. They all have the same moments of one dude who's like, yeah, I just made it. Another dude might be like, oh, that's the last, don't have them anymore, those in me. Some kind of
rough
type thing.
Maybe I'm taking your example too literally.
Clearly you already are.
But did you see the article talking about this is my opinion. This is not my opinion, but the best video game character ever made, Gordon Freeman. That was more or less the argument.
The blank slate of video games.
The blank slate of video games. The whole thing with Gordon Freeman was they talked about how a lot of people compare him to Master Chief because in both cases you never see I'm just telling you, Rob's rolling his eyes, everybody. He's rolling his eyes. But
keep doing that. No, it's good.
The straw man argument they propped up was, well, they're both people you don't see, so you can, what's the term when you apply your own personality traits to a character?
Projection.
There we go. But the difference is Master Chief does in fact talk, and in fact they go out of their way to inject him with a history and with character.
With so much history. So I have no idea what's going on.
And a mild
I mean, game. I love those games, and I'm like, whoa, I'm lost right now.
I'm sorry,
now.
I spaced out for 1 second. Are we still talking?
We're talking about Halo briefly.
Okay, then what I was going to say.
What did you do? What were you doing?
That just happens. Things go away, and then I snap back.
You didn't,
like,
you didn't,
oh, shit, are we
talking
about Gordon
Freeman? You weren't looking at your phone or doing anything. You just
I have no idea
he didn't even check his phone.
You didn't do anything. Okay.
No, but I was going to say, you also get that nice, weird, I'm in love with a hologram AI thing going on. Or maybe that's just me because I'm lonely and I project.
No. That I know is happening. Cortana's a great character,
yeah.
Actually.
Well,
she's
so
the only person who gives any context to what's going on.
But at the same time, I feel it's like they're like telegraph. They're like pulling their punch on that. It's like, look, if he's in love with a goddamn AI and there's like clearly a relationship going on there, we could go a little. Let's just enjoy
is
it a little
he
more.
In love with the AI?
Or well, are the AI we are in love with her?
Or is
him.
It, or is America in love with the AI?
Well, America's always in love with an AI. Whatever's hot and piping and artificial, they're into.
I don't know. But, I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd agree with that.
Do you mean like Folger's crystals? Like what it was like?
I was thinking more like the delicious McFishwish. McFishwitch.
The McRib.
The McRib. Well, yep. The McRib, side note, and we'll have a whole other episode about this. There's a fascinating PhD thesis about how to predict when and where the McRib will emerge based on pork prices
but
time of year.
There was an article refuting the presence of the McRib based on pork prices because here was the argument.
Wait,
that whenever pork
you guys have opposing viewpoints on this alleged PhD thesis.
Yes. So their argument was, oh, the reason the McRib can't be announced is because it's only when the pork price
okay,
is dropped.
Hold on,
but
you are massively simplifying the man's argument.
Let me respond and refute the simplified argument before you make it complex. So So
we'll get back to your video game shit.
Wait. First of all, is there even pork in the McRib?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I've never had one. I mean, I don't mean that. Nor have I.
It
is a pork based meat product.
So literally imagine like a pork slurry, like almost like ground beef.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and it's
compressed to look like it has ribs.
Okay, and there aren't actually ribs.
There are no bones, but it looks like it has rib bones. They are also made from meat. It basically just takes.
Wait, is it a multi-step process then?
I would imagine that they render some sort of slurry and then.
I assume it's
injection mold.
But their bones, they look like bones, but you can eat them unlike bones.
It looks like a piece of rib meat, literally with ribs in it, but the ribs that you see are just more meat. There is no bone.
What alchemy is this?
No, think of it this way. Have you ever seen the pink slime that they make chicken nuggets out of?
Yes, I do. Yeah,
it looks like strawberry flavored froyo.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So imagine that for pork.
Beef froyo.
I get it.
And then what's so amazing is they more or less have created like an icon, like a 3D, think like a desktop icon of ribs, but made that into a meat that you can consume on a sandwich.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's like the simulation of bones is a little weird.
It's
like,
very
absolutely,
strange.
Right?
It doesn't really taste like meat. There is a word for the state of something that is...
I mean, I guess it's... I don't know what the word is.
No, I'm really curious. You sounded like... Please.
There's a word for this. The state of something that... Okay, so you're looking at it and it's not... Like, you know that it's not what it looks like it is.
The uncanny valley of meat?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about the uncanny valley of ribs.
You're like, that looks like a bone, but it's not a bone.
But it came from something with bones.
But it came like a bone thing. But I'm
going
to eat it. Yes, totally. Right? It's the McGreet. The McGreet.
Ben really liked that one.
That was a snarf.
I'm so happy about it.
That was based on...
the McGreet.
Oh, that was a reference to McGreet, everybody.
Who is your audience, dude?
Oh, my God. I have no clue.
Yeah, exactly.
Five dudes in Texas.
Let's talk about podcasts, the mechanics of podcasting. There is no way to tell. Is there a way to tell how many people actually listen? It's not like YouTube.
Yeah, of course. There's metrics.
Metrics from who?
Freddie. Freddie just gives us a spreadsheet.
Oh, because it comes from him. It's not an iTunes store podcast. It's a Freddie.
No, it'll be on iTunes, but iTunes will also give you
Freddie
metrics.
Freddie Wong Incorporated presents.
And I'm actually saying iTunes gives us metrics without any knowledge.
No, they don't. I don't think they do, actually.
And there's zero context for it. It's just like there were 47 people. And what did those 47 people do? There were 47 people.
Yeah. Now I'm curious. I'm going to look into it. But anyways, it's not on iTunes yet. It's only on Rocket Jump. So we can at least tell you the five to six people.
Okay, cool.
Every one of you are special because there's only less than 10 of you.
We have a list
of
names.
If you email us
Timmy,
your name,
Nelson, Chester.
Ben will carve you a spaceship out of balsa wood.
No, I thought last week it was woodcuts. Was it woodcuts last week?
This week it's balsa wood.
Okay, fine. Balsa wood spaceships, personalized for you.
We have a contest where Ben carves you spaceships out of different woods every week.
Yeah. Well,
how many portraits have you made?
None. We haven't got any contests.
How many listeners do you have since you
this
know?
Thing, this million. Thing went online last night. Literally last night was when they went online.
How many listeners did you have last night?
I don't know.
So you don't know anything. You have no sense of reporting. You have no sense of demographic. You have no audience. I mean, this is a podcast fail.
This is like an existential boat ride into darkness. Like, you just need to throw your arms
Rob
open
actually knows
and
a few things about
this.
Come with me, gentle listener, while I take you down a trail of mystery.
It was the Crypt Keeper from
New Hampshire.
I was thinking like Maelstrom the Rise.
You can't get there from here. I like that kind of.
It's the Crypt Keeper and the Pepperidge Farms guy kind of meeting in the middle.
The Pepperidge Farms.
So really quickly, just to refute your McRib argument.
Oh, Christ.
There's a great article about why pork prices wouldn't affect when the McRib comes, just because McDonald's is more. You can't think of McDonald's as a food service company. You have to think of it as a giant force of nature that is completely vertically integrated, so that they determine the pork prices. Their consumption will single-handedly change and determine what pork prices are.
Logan sort of makes a good point.
Two points that I would like to tweak that a little bit. One, I'm sure McDonald's has an effect on pork prices, but as outside of the McRib, McDonald's doesn't really do pork products. They don't really. I mean, beef, sure. Chicken, I could totally buy that. Pork, outside of McRib, they don't do it.
And also,
internationally, they don't really sell McRibs outside of the Western Hemisphere and English-speaking countries.
Think about this one fact.
Mostly because it's considered unclean.
McDonald's. I actually learned a fact about pork, but hold on. McDonald's is the number one consumer of apples in the world.
Yeah, the apple pies, baby.
yeah, that alone, that one product, apple pies, which is that's not as big as a hamburger by any means, or a fry, is bigger than any other company in the world for apples.
I can totally believe that.
I'd argue McRibs is on par with
I would completely disagree because, one, you can eat apples literally anywhere in any culture and they are available everywhere. And, two, apple pies at McDonald's are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. The McRib is available in pork-eating countries, which are much smaller in terms of, like, a marketing commercialization. Oh, God.
I think when we think
we've
McDonald's.
We've gone way off the rails here. This is a discussion for another time.
No, I think this is fantastic. But if we think about where McDonald's are, I think if you take the percentage of McDonald's in pork-eating countries, it's a very high percentage of McDonald's. That's what I'd say. Or predominantly pork-eating countries.
No, okay, I see what you're saying. I would agree with you to a certain extent, but you're basically talking like it's not just like, oh, it's a pork-eating country. It's an accounting decision. Do we want to deal with pork infrastructure in a country where we know X percent of people will never ever touch pork ever?
Logan just handed me his keys under the table, and I think he's planning on taking you down.
Oh my God! The other flip side of this, I would also say.
And on McRib, one last thing about McRib.
Or we can get off this. This is fine. He made no. He also, his argument wasn't just about pork prices. It was about seasonality and a whole lot of other stuff going on. Where he essentially argued that McRibs were used as a loss leader to get people to buy more soda. That was his like heavy deep one where he was basically like, when pork prices go below a certain dollar amount, then it becomes cheap enough for McDonald's to go like, oh, we going to sell you a big old Dr. Pepper.
So here's what we're going to do, guys.
That's actually very interesting.
No,
if you tweet me to remind me this conversation happened, I will tweet out the links for both the thesis paper, assuming it is available online freely.
JSTOR?
That's not free.
Nature?
PDF. I'll find a PDF online, or Ben will, and send it to me.
One of those
and
things.
And secondarily, the article that refutes said PhD.
God.
Maybe.
Damn it.
Or maybe they completely agree.
Wouldn't it just be a kick in the pants if we were talking about two totally separate PhD theses about the McRib?
Mine was actually an economist article or a business article. Business Weekly article.
Mine was based off some reading after listening to some NPR.
So really interesting thing I found out today about a ethnic cleansing war in an Armenian-speaking country. One half of the conflict, the Christian side, actually only raised pigs for eating. They had like way more pigs than humans because their enemies wouldn't eat them. And so they could count on them as being a like unrateable food supply.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. They all had terrible heart disease, but that's a separate issue. Anyways, so Mediterranean diet, don't eat pork.
Yeah, I'm contractually unable to speak about the Armenian tragedy. So let's move on.
Anyway, so going back to the future of story in video games. I think what we're somehow I don't even know if I got to the point about Gordon Freeman and Halo.
Yeah, no, I think you should finish that up. So what you were going to say, because I'll say it faster than you will, is that having characters in which the player can imbue their own
blank slate versus
walking around
player character who has a voice
talking
and says
to
things.
Me. I'm some dude named Gordon Freeman, but I don't talk. So then, like, as a player, I put myself into the character. I don't really personally believe in that. I mean, I believe in it. I think it's actually super effective. I think it actually solves like what were a lot of problems that were more problematic back then than they maybe need to be now about audio loading and having the things that my characters say, you know, fit with my experience and all that kind of stuff. I feel like, look, if anybody did the actual psychological testing to see how that stuff worked, it would be Valve. But now if you look at like Left 4 Dead, your player character talks and your four characters talk and they have this kind of really cool procedural dialogue. When you play TF2, like when you look at stuff and things, you announce things to the other team, like your player character talking is part of communicating, is part of being a strong part of your team. So when you hear somebody like the engineer put up the mount of guns or the sentry, whatever it is, you know, you're like, you know what's going on in the world. It's giving you information by having that character do procedurally generated dialogue things. So, you know, Left 4 Dead, especially because it is a soft story game in which there are characters and you know which one you are and you know which one the AIs are or your friends are or whatever. You know, there's a banter and there's, you know, shit going on between those guys that's cool. I mean, that's actually makes the game more fun.
So
Like that vet who's kind of a dick. Like, you know,
my Left 4 Dead experience is actually pretty minimal.
Okay.
Well, no, I love the coach.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Coach is good.
But so I actually experienced the emoting single player or emoting first person in BioShock Infinite last week or the week before that.
Okay.
And actually drove me nuts.
Really?
Insofar as
Booker drove you nuts.
And so like him going, oh my gosh, this is so difficult right now. Like
what,
when he's like zipping around.
What version of BioShock Infinite were you playing?
Maybe
with?
I got like the hacked buggy DVD.
Yeah, seriously. You paid an extra $10. There's a deal. There's like a
yo,
extra
man,
pack
hey,
for like
moany bitch protagonist DLC
exactly,
pack.
The over talking whiny pack.
That is exactly
you know?
What it felt like. Like even going from the lighthouse up into whatever the place is called, Sumeria or wherever.
Columbia. He doesn't.
Sumeria. Babylon.
Like he was just like, oh my god, what's happening to me? Like
he doesn't do that.
Whoa. I was like, oh my god, I hate this guy.
Did you play Far Cry 3?
No.
Okay, Far Cry 3, which I like a lot, is a fun game, arguably has some of that a little bit in the beginning where it's like, what happened? What is that? They killed my brother.
That's it. It's the breathiness. Right. Breathiness equals bitchiness, guys. Write it down like when you're doing your
tattoo it on your wrist.
When you're doing your VO directing.
On the painful side of your forearm.
Which side is that?
It's the part that feels like a lady's thigh, as opposed to a man's. Well, imagine needles piercing that kind of visceral.
There's a lot of veins.
So for all of you guys, because this audio base, Rob is like 6'6", probably like 300, and dude's got sleeves, man.
Yeah. He's actually got one of those creepy,
my time in the Yakuza.
Eye drop tattoos around, or teardrops surrounding his eyes.
There's some skinny dude who looks a lot like me on Google Image Search.
Like sunbursts.
He's going to beat that pussy, man. Dude.
I don't know if you're talking about having sex with him or attacking him.
Beat that pussy, man.
Moving on.
So anyway, so Far Cry 3. Far Cry 3. No,
the
list of
things
we were still talking about Far Cry 3.
Far Cry 3 is a terrific game that has like speaking in tongues kind of breathy thing. So
do you think it worked? Were you like, man, that worked?
I have no, you know, there are other you know, characters in that game who I'm not as fond of, but the player character is cool. Was cool by me. Most of the characters I like, actually. There's more moments in the game that I'm not as fond of.
So the other thing is, I'm trying to think if there's like a specific article to reference, because how you're talking about story in video games is, I think, often how people talked about story in relation to sports, where you can take a game of football.
The emergent narrative of sports?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, people like sports.
Well, absolutely. And
video games could do well to learn a thing or two from things that people like.
And
like
I think there is a natural conflict there, and you can totally underscore like what is occurring from moment to moment.
By the way, I mean, this is, you know, we're living in a world where like 8% of the people who play like Call of Duty actually play the story, right? I'm sure it's more than that. But yeah. I mean, like, so that's what people are into. I mean, people are into procedurally generated. And
so
the better you can do that.
So do you think it's time for a move away from linear?
No. So I think three act structure stories in video games. First of all, video game stories don't and shouldn't have three acts because it doesn't. I mean,
2,000 act structure.
Yeah, it's more like, I mean, a 20-hour experience is like Act One, meet the character. Act Two, the entire game. Act Three. Like, that doesn't really make any sense.
Act Three, emotional wrap up.
Yeah, exactly. Emotional wrap up, right?
Said like that.
Exactly.
Now it's time for the emotional wrap up.
Act Three.
So no, I do think that story is an important part of what made games games, and I think the story will continue to be there. I think people put their own stories into things like multiplayer games, but I also think there's a reason why certain characters are more popular in multiplayer than others in franchises that have characters. I think there's a lot of like people. So this sort of also answers some of your question. I think, you know, there's a give and take between like multiplayer characters. Let's say Gears of War. Like, okay. I like to play as. Right now, I'm playing as this character named Alex Brand, who's in the comic books. I like playing as Alex Brand because I actually like the dialogue, which, you know, I wrote. So I think the actors killed it. I think
Rob Auden of the characters?
No, no, not at all. I mean, and my writing partner wrote. I should say Tom Bissell. And it's not even the character so much. It's just like I think the actress really killed it. So, but I'm putting that like I know that. So I like hearing her because she was so great and. I don't know. It's just like, and it's fun, and it's funny, and it's loose. It feels very true to kind of the tone that I like about Gears, which is this sort of like it doesn't take itself too seriously type thing. So I dig that character. I also like playing as Baird because he's the hero of the story. I don't as much like playing as Jungle Ty because he isn't in the game. I've never been that big of a fan of Ty, who was a character in Gears of War 2, who, you know, has a whole history in the books and all that stuff. I mean, he's fine. It's just like, you know, he's a little bit like kind of like walks with spirits. Like, I don't quite understand if he's supposed to kind of be like Native American or like
is he supposed to be that
Sumatran
character from Predator?
Or something?
Is he like the Native American wrestler in Predator?
He's definitely like the wind talker of the group. Yeah. And so I don't play with Ty, not because I don't want to hear Ty's bullshit. No, I'm just kidding. I don't play with Ty because I don't want to hear him. You know, wind talking at me. I mean, it is a two-way street there, and I think the biggest thing is, like, you know, you want to characters in games should be people that you want to hang out with, and so because you're going to be hanging out with them a lot. So if they're coming at you with like stuff you think is funny or stuff you think is cool, if it's good, it's not going to bother you. And the fact that you don't like Booker when he's like whining is because, you know, well, I mean, dude should be tired. He ran up all those steps. He gets strapped to a chair. He takes off like a rocket. Like, he should. I think he says things like, "What is this place?" And that doesn't bug me
equally,
so much because I'm sitting
shitty.
There as a player. I'm sitting there being like, "What is this place?"
So here's, I guess it goes
into. Is he
into,
putting words in my mouth?
Well,
maybe.
I think there's the level of explicitness that I think we've come to expect from video games as opposed to other visual storytelling mediums, and it just. Maybe it needs to be done that way, but it feels very inelegant and very heavy-handed often.
Heavy-handed, I'll absolutely give you. I mean, like, you know, I mean, I really dug Tomb Raider, and I think Rihanna did a great job, but, like, you know, Lara Croft says, like, to herself, or people say to her, "You can do it, Lara," like,
hey, just
80
just as,
times,
just
maybe.
Just a thing, because I don't really know anything about Tomb Raider and the new one. So when you said you think Rihanna did
the
really
writer good, of the game.
Okay, I was for a moment thinking, he's like, wow, they hired Rihanna
yeah,
to be
exactly.
Lara Croft's voice.
White
that's
like a
amazing.
Diamond.
Like, yeah. Video games are crazy these days.
Totally, right? I think Rihanna did an amazing job creating the
Rihanna
game
nailed
by
that
herself
just,
in its entirety.
It's just Rihanna, I guess it like, all started with Jay-Z Rockefeller, you know what I'm saying?
Over 2 weeks, Rihanna designed wrote, directed the entire game.
I'm imagining Rihanna in a text editor just slowly building Zork, being
yeah,
like,
totally.
Oh man, shit, this shit's crazy.
Lara, it's so dangerous. I don't know why she talks like that. Lara, it's so dangerous. Lara.
So,
she's sort of like narrating an adventure novel or something.
But yes, that
Lara
heavy
thought to herself.
That heavy headedness is sort of like,
she's a lot
hey,
like, she sounds like Trey Parker a little bit. Lara.
Little bit.
It just feels like they're scared that you're not going to understand where they're going, so they need to spell it out for you or
well,
tell the player
thing.
How they're going to feel.
Okay, so here's the other thing with video games. I don't know how you're going to play my game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You may play my game for 10 minutes and then get a phone call and your girlfriend breaks up with you and you decide to go on a pilgrimage in Japan and 6 months later you come back and you're like, oh, yeah, that TV's been on for a long time. And you sit down and you're like, I guess I might as well finish up this sweet game. And you don't have any idea what's going on because so much of your life has happened. The game is totally clueless to that. No idea. Like, it doesn't know. It actually can know.
It can know.
It has every capability to know the time of day.
If what I'm hearing about the Durango is true.
No, you were talking about how stories need to be more aware of the state machine that games are.
No,
engage
B no,
on
need
girlfriend
games,
dumping
no,
sequence.
No, totally. That's actually
yo, bro,
amazing.
Yo, bro,
totally,
I'm sorry
right?
about your breakup.
Holy shit, he just got dumped by his girlfriend.
Facebook.
So we're gonna kick in the B plot where there's like a bitch that dumps you and then you meet this rad girl later and
Facebook
growth.
Status tells me that you've had a severe life event since you started playing my game 6 months
ago. Do you remember
ago.
Mantis in the original Metal Gear Solid?
Well, you had to plug in the controller to the other shit.
And it was referencing your memory card.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Imagine Mantis today.
I was pretty drunk when I played the original Gear of War, so I can't help it.
So to your point, video games have the ability to detect things about the player, the environment, the time of day. I mean, like, what's the kind of iPod game that the Canadians made?
Animal Crossing for iPod.
Maple Syrup Slide.
I don't think they're Canadian. The
Tim Hortons game?
Sword and Sorcery.
Okay.
Sword and Sorcery.
That game sucked, by the way.
Oh, I liked it. And
a piece of shit.
One thing that I liked about it was, I guess I'm not allowed to say anything bad about anything, because you hate everything. I'll just like it.
No, that's cool. It was boring.
One thing I did like is actually they had this thing where you had to like play the game during full or new moon or something like that, and you actually had to play the game during the full or new moon. And you could cheat it by setting your clock, but it knew you were setting your clock. And so it wouldn't give you like 100% complete. But it acknowledged the ability to cheat it if you didn't feel like waiting a month to finish the game. And some people are like, okay, a month to finish a game is sort of a barrier to entry, but it's like, you know, but the point is not so much that maybe is it the best puzzle ever.
Sack up and get your lunar charts out.
Yeah, exactly. But is it, but the game knows, right? And it's one of the first instances of a game, maybe not the first, but it's a good popular instance of a game knowing
sure
what this phase of the moon is.
States beyond what the magic circle yeah. usually allows for.
Yeah,
you know totally. What I would love is a version of Tetris that's using the microphone in my phone to know exactly how many people are fucking annoying the shit out of me while I'm trying to play, so it could dumb it down a little bit when there's a lot of ambient noise.
It's really like scalable difficulty.
Boom. Based on my ambient sound and, I don't know, sweaty handedness.
Patent it. Right now,
I just really like Tetris.
I think as part of this podcast, we need a patented button, like that automatically patents a transcription of the last half hour of our podcast.
Any ideas represented in this podcast are officially patented by Ben and Logan.
And we just send it directly to a lawyer to send it directly to the patent office.
I like that. That's good. We're going to make $1 million every day
for the rest
of our lives.
So, Rob.
Yes, sir.
How do your views of story align with more proceed? So there's a distinguished.
I'm going
to
answer your question before you ask it. So think of it this way: if you have a set of you have a data set, right?
Props on me for actually a while
long
now.
Enough that I can do this.
Yeah.
see. So imagine that each individual, like, you know, call and response to the system is sort of a brick, right? And so there are many, many variables that you're going to need that you could track, like.
Mm-hmm.
And so the actual set of variables that you're tracking, the ability to track them, will take up things I know nothing about, like system memory and AI power and stuff, right?
AI power, classic.
AI power is critical. So the ability to change those things and track different things is, in a sense, a manner via which you can kind of decide how your narrative is going to evolve. Because, you know, in certain parts of the game, you're going to want to track different things, like let's say if it's a narrative part of the game, you still have a narrative. Characters still look at you when they talk to you. Maybe you're not in a combat kind of situation. There's less game in the game happening. Someone's just kind of info dumping on you. But so if you're looking at that person, as I'm looking at you now,
mm-hmm.
and then if I drift off as I'm doing now and start looking away, you might be like, hey, dude, over here, buddy. What's up? Chop, chop. And so there's like little interruption points and there's little things that is a character-to-character interaction. Now we're looking at a whole different set of states. It's not about how much ammo I have or how much health I have.
I would just take it one step further. If you got like a fucking Kinect or something, why not just measure my pulse and my relative actual physical attention?
So Nintendo...
And I'm not being sarcastic at all.
No, Nintendo 2 years ago showed this galvanic skin response sensor thing that was like the E-Fuel or I forget what it
was that
called.
For galvanic skin response? I thought that was just BPM.
I think it's BPM plus galvanic. I mean, it should be. I mean, galvanic is really easy. I know Valve, again, Valve, has been doing tests with controllers that have,
They've been really into biometric
stuff. I've even seen one with the Kinect where they can, through some sort of photographic filter, they can actually, I think you were telling me about it, Logan, where they can actually get a pretty decent pulse and agitation.
That's not through Kinect. They can do that with any video, ever.
Well, that would also include Kinect then, wouldn't
it? It would, but it also includes like your Batman DVD. They could
My
get
Batman
the
DVD doesn't have a
did
camera
you see this,
on
Rob?
It.
It's pretty neat.
Which one?
MIT was it's actually incredible. It's one of those things that when they explain
it,
you're like, "Oh man,
4
like,
weeks ago."
Yeah, I'm just going to repeat something
do
something
it.
That the
No,
you're already repeating, so let's just make it quick.
So it was taking the delta of color from frame to frame and amplifying it. So what that means is your skin as your heart beats, changes different shades of red. And while they can track that via text and just give you a BPM,
mm-hmm.
they decided to display it visually. And so they ramp up actually like the RGB values in their gel delta.
Totally.
So you get the, the red flashing
totally
face,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah, totally awesome baby flashing.
Yeah. But anyways, that's what you're just... So you can get BPM from a camera. You don't need any sort of wearable at this point.
Right.
But to Rob's point, Valve actually has been looking at biometric... sensors for game control pretty heavily.
That's interesting.
But the interesting thing is Gabe Newell specifically called out, eye tracking.
That's what I was just going to say, because that's something we can do with the camera technology that is already in our homes, assuming we have a Kinect or a
They were talking about your laptop camera, like in your MacBook, tracking your eyes on the screen. Yeah. Well, it's relatively super easy.
No, it's super easy. Like,
Logan, I could do it tonight.
I'm going to finish this drink right now.
And totally do some eye programming.
Mm-hmm.
But he was
a lot of ginger in that.
But then he... But then he was like, and then we're looking at other biometric techniques, and I was like, well, what could that be beyond like BPM and galvanic skin response? Like, what else is there? And those are not the
pupil dilation.
Whether or not your hairs on your forearms and body are raising or lowering based on that kind of
goosebump. But dude, in all those cases, those are totally involuntary.
Respiratory,
as opposed to eye tracking, which is. How it's been implemented.
Skin responses. I mean, can you control your heartbeat?
That's what I'm saying. You can't.
Guru Logan.
If I'm drunk enough.
Last time I was at the doctor, it was
good
over
answer.
90. They didn't.
Charger cord.
He wants charger. The eye tracking is the only one that has explicit control. Your heart rate, your galvanic skin response is all involuntary.
What if you're like an Italian and you start doing like the hey like the kind of
okay,
like
so you can hack the system.
Really, that's where we're gonna go.
They're just asking you to beat your chest.
No, it's not. I mean, I'm saying
fuck
like the,
you guys.
I'm just saying international signs for disgust, like hands. I'm not, you know, the hand signal for disgust with the Italian.
But that's
just
gestural. Yeah. That's not biometric. That's why I was so intrigued by.
Are you?
So
the question is my gaze a form of expression or is it a form of?
I don't know how we got off on
a little
this.
Bit of color.
It's a little. Let's roll it back a little bit.
You know? Okay.
So you were talking about more or less.
I was saying if I'm looking at a dude who's talking to me in a game.
Bam, I know what happened. You were talking about that, and then Ben took it to,
Jesus,
to gestural.
We could rewind and figure this out. Anyway, so the point
though.
Is
there's
like,
no rewind on this system.
It's digital, man.
That's crazy.
There's no rewind. There's no tape.
There's no yesterday. There's only now.
But you're talking about more or less contextual responses.
I'm saying there's two things to that. So right then, there's giving characters in games a sense of memory. So then. The actions that you perform in the game determine whether or not the character likes you or doesn't like you. So then there are, say, and I will happily write 4 scripts if I can have a character who has 4 states of being. One being that he likes you, but he thinks you're useless. This is my simple Cartesian axis version of this. Mm-hmm. I think the actual thing would be more complicated.
Useful, useless, you have like you'd hate you.
You put utility on one axis, you have like hate on the other. So there's like... Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so if it's like you're supposed to have done a stealth sequence and you're going around shooting everybody, and even though he thinks you're a cool dude, he's like, I love you, man, but you got to fucking keep it down a little bit. Like, that's a state of being. And then, like, if you're ninja master, but like you're just totally, like, the guy thinks you're a dick, then he's going to talk to you. He's like, look, I respect your abilities, but like, you know, what you did in Sector 7 is unforgivable. Like, so now there's the characters talk to you in different ways depending on your actions. So now the play part of the game influences the story part of the game in a dynamic way. And the way that you receive that story from those characters can be sculpted in a dynamic way.
So have you...
And all you're doing is changing the variables, right?
Have you implemented a... two-dimensional state system like that before?
I've implemented a text state system like that before. Like using like basically chatbots and scripting language for
and did you think
text
it was
detection.
Was it effective for more than 5 minutes worth of spoken dialogue? I don't know what medium the dialogue came
no, I mean
through,
literally like
minutes.
Like text like a chatbot text.
Okay,
I mean
so
that's
five,
the only thing I the only thing
let's
I
ramp it
the
up
only
to 10 minutes was it effective after 10 minutes
in what in creating a compelling character or in creating compelling
in creating a sense of memory.
No, well, I mean, I'm not good enough. It's, I mean, it could have been if I was better at scripting. I mean, I think, you know, smarter people than me need to put together sort of like, you know, I can identify what the variables might be and like how, you know, I think it's really the kind of thing where you need, as the guy from Valve was saying, you need to have a programmer and a writer in a room together and they need to understand what each other one does and why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a path for, you know, better story in games. I mean, I think that's, it needs, these are classes of people, so to speak, that have been kept as far apart from one another as possible for reasons I don't quite understand.
Well,
I think it's because I think it's because people, I don't know, there's sort of a lack of understanding.
You know, many moons ago, I was kind of in, I took your position as far as, there's no, like, these programmers just need to talk to these writers and then it'll get solved.
But they don't. I mean, it happens occasionally, but
it happened
part,
a lot.
Don't.
And it's the field is called narrative intelligence. And
in a research context, it happened.
But with incredibly skilled writers. It was one of those things where these people were not going to talk.
Have been made out of this.
The first and most popular is Facade.
Oh, sure.
Sure, right?
Yeah.
Michael Mateus. that he and they had many conferences
and
at
Facade,
MIT.
Facade uses a scripting language that's very similar to the one that I'm, or similar. No, it's not actually, but it's whatever. Facade uses a scripting language.
Cobalt.
For,
just Cobalt.
Forge uses a scripting language called Fortran.
I read on a typewriter that actually operates, makes punch cards and
everything. Yeah, pretty awesome.
I mean, Facade is. Okay, so what you're going to say is that Facade is not exactly the most successful video game for giving people narrative in the world.
And that's fine, but then attempts...
I was super psyched for Facade when it came out, and then I played it, and I was like I get it. Well, I mean, yeah, it's like, I get it, but it's not...
And that was their first attempt. You should see all the other shit they made after that. It just didn't work.
So they made stuff after that?
Absolutely. They held conferences. There's hundreds of games built
around
this.
Are my tax dollars paying for this?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, now
good. No, I'm into that.
Honestly,
did anything cool? What you're saying is nothing ever. Maybe they're.
What came out of it was a lot of really cool ideas and papers that were conceptual, but when rubber met road, it turns to shit.
So, who are the awesome writers that aren't helping?
Let's really quickly roll back and just give you guys some context. Facade is a video game.
You don't know who your audience even is.
You can download it for free. Facade. Facade.
It's a French word.
Yes.
Does it need the accents?
Which it does actually have a CD or whatever.
It has it's a C with like a wiener.
I believe it's called CD.
But
which is wiener in French. Sorry.
Yes.
Moving on.
So really all it is it's a chap up, but there's two people there, and you walk around a room in first person, and you can interact with the objects and talk with the people, and it's a couple who are having a conflict.
Talk with the objects.
Can do all of it.
Sweet.
What if I want to talk with spirits? I want to talk.
Then you pick
talk
up
to an angel.
But the main dude behind the series.
Ty. Yeah, exactly.
I think there might have been two dudes behind it, but one guy definitely kind of glommed on.
I think there was a woman involved as well. If I remember correctly.
Well, I guess she was not as aggressive in publicizing herself because now everybody just calls
gender burn. Oh,
now it's all just Michael Mateus.
Okay.
For better or worse, and Michael Mateus is now the head of the UCSD. No, UCSC, so University of California, Santa Cruz, video game PhD program.
Oh, that is a school. Totally. Yeah. I'm like, UCSC? Right.
So they opened a PhD program for video games.
Yeah, no, I know somebody who's also there, who's rad.
And Michael Mateus is one of the main dudes there.
Jane Pinkard.
But after Facade, they opened up this whole thing, which was more or less, let's use AI to make totally awesome stories. And you're like, yeah, that's totally great. And so they pulled in all these different acting theories and story theory sort of things and had a few conferences under the term narrative intelligence. And you can actually go find the book online or at your library, and it's a giant, like, 300-page compendium of all these papers about narrative intelligence. And you read them, and you're like, holy shit, this is awesome. Uh-huh. They've cracked the nut as to how story and games work. And then you find their prototypes that they've made to demonstrate their theories, and they're all just horrendous.
Are they horrendous as games, or are they horrendous as storytelling mechanisms?
They're horrendous as in you're like, this system just doesn't work.
So my problem with Facade was that I couldn't get it to understand anything or...
Text parsing.
Well,
natural language programming.
No, I seem to be better at
McRib.
Finishing your sentence.
McRib.
No, I couldn't get it to. It didn't really respond in a to anything I was doing. I mean, it didn't really respond at all.
Yeah.
It didn't feel responsive. I'm sure. I know it has text parsing. I know it has a custom scripting language. I mean, I've read some of their papers on making Facade. I just didn't realize that sort of field existed. So yeah. I'm really interested in that field.
Pick up the book.
I would like to think that there are people with whom I someday may work who make that possible. But obviously, like, console games don't need text parsing, right?
No, and text parsing wasn't, they went out of their way to, Facade had text parsing, but a lot of these examples did not.
Okay.
A big challenge became, a lot of people went the route that you went, and I actually went that route too, because the reason I got into this was building my own state machine.
You built a state machine?
A state machine where
is that how Utah
specifically
happened?
I made a like 2-4-dimensional state machine similar to what you're describing, where think of it, you have a value for how much they trust or don't trust you,
yeah.
Or
yeah,
how awesome they think you are or not awesome they think you are.
Have you seen Cleverbot?
I've heard of Cleverbot.
Cleverbot.
I interacted very lightly.
Variable input system is a 2-4-dimensional state machine, I believe.
And what are the states?
They're user definable.
Whoa.
It's basically, it's an Excel spreadsheet. The problem that I think with those kind of systems is what you actually need is an n-dimensional database. You need an n-dimensional relational database.
Well,
speaking of the future.
Ultimately, what happens
my brain just shit itself.
Is A, you have trouble, unless you're incredibly heavy-handed, maybe this is why video games are so heavy-handed, you have really a hard time figuring out where you rest on that spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And usually...
Wait, for the spectrum being what?
The spectrum being where your coordinates are on, let's say, a two-dimensional...
Oh, like the like utility Cartesian axes,
sure,
thing.
Okay,
sure.
And on top of that, they're usually obfuscating what those axes are because they don't want to reveal the system that drives their engine, right?
Unless like, their names are BioWare.
Sure.
Paragon. Renegade.
Well, I mean, and traditional like D20 RPGs definitely wear that a little bit.
Which is why they do it.
Lawful good.
Modeled, yeah,
sure.
Totally. Chaotic good.
Chaotic good. Han Solo, dude. But... supposed to lawful evil Darth Vader.
Totally.
By the way, have you guys seen the new photo trend of Vadering?
I have.
No,
I have
no.
Actually.
Ben, Vadering's the best thing since the Hadouken Japanese schoolgirls.
No. It was What's the one? Because a lot of people. I saw the people doing the Dragon Ball thing.
That's called Hadoukening for some reason, which doesn't make any fucking sense for what the pictures actually are.
Wait, that's Hadouken.
That's the Japanese schoolgirl one.
Yeah.
But that's weird because they're not really.
No, exactly.
They're doing the ground pound thing.
Yeah, they're doing the ground pound thing.
Okay.
That's the Dragon Ball Z one.
That's the Dragon Ball one.
I think there's a lot of different things.
Yeah, I know. I've seen people doing that too, but the first ones I saw were all the ground pound ones.
Yeah, the ground. Right.
So I guess my question is there a Vadering app yet? Like, can I download something that will guarantee...
In the same way that there's like a Harlem Shuffle app or something?
Is that a thing?
There's a Harlem Shuffle app?
Well, not Harlem Shuffle. What's it called? Harlem Shake. I'm sorry.
But you should the Harlem Shuffle app.
I've been at a video game conference
which
for a week.
It's just a ragtime background. With footstep instructions.
My week is made.
So, Vadering is an incredible photo.
My favorite Vadering photos that I'm looking at right now.
The baby one's
pretty good.
Is the baby being thrown and acting like he's choking?
No, I'm pretty sure he's referring to this one.
Okay,
that's the one.
It's a baby holding a woman up.
It's pretty impressive.
Actually, there's a couple baby ones then. But, I mean, obviously the baby is going to be the funniest.
Oh, yeah, this one's pretty good, too.
Is there a cat doing it? Is there a grumpy cat doing it?
If there isn't, there will be one.
That's the one.
Alex, how much time do we have?
There will be one in the next 12, like, hours if there isn't one already.
5 more minutes. All right. So, Rob, I think we're slowly getting tradition where I spring a question about your profession.
Sure.
About it in the future. So I'm going to, it's incredibly generic and usually.
I just answered that question for the last like 45 minutes. I'm like, systems based, fixing your narrative intelligence people problems. I mean.
I don't know if we really came to a consensus.
Nope.
Just because you don't agree. What do you do, man? Not what I do. Sorry.
That consensus is the wrong word. I feel like there's much more discussion to be had. In the future, how will people write?
Pregnant pause. I don't you know, actually, let me ask you something. Court stenographers,
you mean with their cordal keyboards?
Yeah, they type faster than we do.
Yeah.
It's a form of shorthand keyboard typing.
So why don't we all learn that?
Because it's hard,
not
dude.
But hold on.
If we start today.
It's not just that they type faster. It's that the output is in a condensed form of language. You have to know how to read it, too.
But computers,
we should be able to translate.
Computers.
Well, we're talking about the future. I mean, I would think that we'd have a better way to type
in terms of writing. Here's what I think
myself, you know, I'm a fast thinker, and, you know, and
we have to get rid
slowly.
Of these terrible QWERTY keyboards and replace them with Dvorak or something.
I was going to say, John Dvorak told me once.
This one time I was drunk in Kuala Lumpur, and John Dvorak wouldn't stop yammering.
Here's what I actually think is the answer, and we wouldn't know until one of us tries to become a court stenographer. But I think that
is that a dare.
Yeah,
for yourself.
I think writing with a cordal keyboard will always require a level of cognitive load that our current keyboard typing does not. Does that make sense?
You're asking
he's saying that stenographers have to be like
they have to be thinking about
like
they,
mongooses.
They're not thinking about content. They're thinking about transcripting. Like they cannot get down to where when we type, we're more or less stream of consciousnessing, or at least it's so low that it seems that way. I feel like
the funnel, you know, and like the cutoff between thought and expression is pretty significant in typing. I mean, I'm not the fastest typer in the world. I'm not like Freddie Wong, like 110 crazy.
Oh, see, I definitely just I.
Yeah, but
can...
you don't think very. I mean, it's not that you don't.
You're a moron. No, you move real slow.
Logan, the quality of your thought is good, but I mean, like the you know, it takes a,
keep
you know,
digging
it,
the
it
hole.
Takes a minute. It takes a minute. No, there's no. I'm digging.
Exactly. Throw the shovel out of the hole.
I'm very happy in my hole. Like this is good. You know.
Well, I mean, I can certainly.
You're a ruminator, is what
I can type way faster than I can write.
Doesn't that mean he has multiple stomachs?
Or type in all three
you're
cases.
An
in all three cases, it doesn't. It to me at least, in my perception, it does not take any effort to take what I want to say in my head and put it on paper. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas
it says a lot about the quality of your writing.
Well, it says a lot about
not being.
Put
being,
away your
being,
claws, kitty cat.
Being ungood. Yeah. No, I mean, I do think that the quality of writing is somewhat tied to the quality of thought. I mean, and not necessarily like that you can't, one, not you.
I said
one,
put away
one
the
can't,
claws, kitty cat.
One can't think well. I'm just saying that, like, you know, and you have to think about what you're thinking and how to express it and, like, get people to understand that. That mm-hmm. is a secondary process to the quality of actually your concept of your idea, right? So there's idea, it's quality of thought, quality of expression, which is, you know, how well you're able
sure.
to write it. And then what we're talking about in terms of mechanics is the future of how you encode that expressed.
I see. I took it as just the future of an like future of being an author. Like
oh Jesus!
But we can talk about the mechanics of writing. That's cool.
Oh, okay. I mean, sorry. That's why I got into the whole stenographer thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think you know, there was an app I'm sure you guys saw a week or two ago called Sumly that sold to Yahoo.
Really quickly, what was Sumly?
Well, you're the one talking about language parsing. I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, it reads an article.
It was a
and then
teenage
creates,
millionaire maker.
Yeah, it reads an article and then with the magic of artificial intelligence creates a paragraph or two long summary of that article, mm-hmm. right? And so what it's basically doing is some form of natural language. I don't actually I don't know. I mean, and it doesn't, I had it, I tried it for a while before all this news and it doesn't do it spectacularly well, but it doesn't do it poorly either.
Competence.
It's fine. It'll get better. I mean, you know, so the point being is like, are we going to go from having people that write stories? I mean, you could definitely have a computer that takes in a bunch of other news articles and rewrites them into like, you know, like all you have to do is subscribe to the AP Wire or maybe something else. And then you could write articles switching words around, switching phrases around that, you know, contain or summarize news events relatively rapidly. More or less, you know, as they happen, that can happen. But I don't think that the quality of the thought or expression behind those, or certainly the analysis behind those, isn't going to be, you know, interesting.
So do you think creative writing you'll ever be put out of a job by a computer?
No, I do not.
What about in 500 years?
No.
Never?
Uh-uh.
You think the human brain will always be more powerful than a procedural
machine? I'm
just
going to say a caveat. I assume by computer, Logan, you don't refer to artificial intelligence, and I doubt you're taking that into account.
I mean a transistor-based thing, and those transistors can be...
A transistor-based thing? We're talking about 500
dick.
Years in the future, and you're talking about transistors?
It could be a quantum computer by then,
yeah,
I guess.
Seriously, dude. Come on. Really? It's possible, I guess. I mean, I don't really see... I mean, that's, you know, that's the story of, like, it's like every 50s sci-fi story, like the aliens, you know, they don't have souls. They want to be like us because they don't have imaginations, you know?
The whole idea
Logan.
That humans are special because they have imaginations is such a stretch.
I don't know.
Not really. We haven't, I mean.
I mean, just, you know, I don't think my cat has an imagination.
My cat's got an imagination.
I don't have
a
cat.
Shitty one.
I don't have a cat. So my imaginary cat does not have an imagination.
But that was really impressive.
Yeah,
though,
shitty imagination. Imagine a cat. Your imaginary cat doesn't even have an imagination.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, if I could imagine a better cat, maybe it would. My pony totally has an imagination.
See, I think in 10 years we're going to put writers completely out of a job with
computers. Oh hell no, no way.
Okay, that's a crazy.
I think if you have the kind of job where you're writing like news stories like for AOL and shit like that, you might be little bit nervous. You know, I can see that, but I don't see because I'm so good at writing. I don't see a big problem for me.
I don't
see creative writing.
You don't see horse ebooks taking over the next Gears of War?
What?
Horse
ebooks is basically a surrealistic fantasy realm. I love how you're like, well, you know, computers might replace creative writing. And then your example is literally a bullshit stream of conscious, like, madness generator.
What is horse? Oh, that's that Twitter feed that makes total nonsense.
Yeah.
But it was generated. It's basically Markov chains.
Yeah, no, I know it
from
is.
Other
I know
books.
It is.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I suppose, like, look at this one.
There was an amazing story where somebody took those streams and then was using them So it was the guy made a dating profile and like whatever dating site X, right?
Sure.
Made it a pretty, you know, an available young woman, and with like a nice picture, and people would message her because, you know, she looks very desirable, and then he would reply with horse ebooks, and the dudes would be like, "Oh, I get it, you're kind of crazy. I'm into crazy." It was an amazing example of things dudes will do. Yeah, totally. And that's
a terrifying like evolutionary development paper right there. The males will continue to
This is like eight steps deep. You know what I mean? Like, God. It's just like nonsense. Oh, cool. Anyway, dude, we have to go out. You know, like, dude, we have to. You're so cool.
I'm going to totally change subjects just because you went to GDC and it's futurism and we're almost at the end here. Did you go to the experimental gameplay presentation?
No, I wanted to, and I ended up, and you'll appreciate this, instead spending an afternoon laying in the park with the dude that made Frog Fractions.
Whoa! Yeah, he's a totally baller dude.
Totally baller dude. Yep. So that Jim Crawford, totally baller dude. Well worth it. Like,
he sounds wild.
No, his ideas
at least. The shit. We can't talk about what he's done.
Super lovely, super awesome guy. Not a goddamn thing wrong with him. And I was like, that's the one thing that I usually like kind of have to go to when I go and have a pass, which I should have more often. And I didn't go because Jim is such a rad dude and I want to hang out with him.
Did I turn you on to Frog Fractions?
You might have.
If I did, I feel really cool.
Yeah, I think you might have.
Nice. Everybody play Frog Fractions.
Frog Fractions.
And then play its very polished, strange second cousin, Ridiculous Fishing.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But Jason Roiden, the Experimental Video Game Jam, did you hear about like his pitch?
Oh, no, I know all about it. I talked to him about
it. It's phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
So can you maybe give them like the 1 minute version?
Well, as I understood it, and it was re-summarized to me.
Give context, because
this wasn't the Experimental Gameplay Summit, though. This was something different. So every year, there's a gameplay challenge, I believe, and they have.
But it's Experimental Gameplay Challenge, right? Isn't that this
maybe
whole thing?
The word is experimental is involved. Maybe it's not. I forget. There is several game designers are given months in advance. They're given an idea that they have to make a game out of, and then that game is presented to the audience, and there's some form of voting. And so this year, I think it was Jason Rohr, I think Will Wright, various other, I think Richard LeMarchand was there.
That was it. Those are the three.
Is there only three?
Yeah, it was always three.
So you know, I actually don't know the other two just because I didn't actually attend, but I'm sure they were awesome. But Jason's, and you're going to have to fill in some of the holes. Jason's involved the fact that he had made some kind of...
What's the prompt? Prompt was the last game for humanity.
Oh, sorry. Right? Yeah. So they had to create the last game. Last game.
Yeah.
I think,
and it should be noted, most of the time, it's a presentation or a pitch. That's the level to which these people go, usually.
Well, they have months to do this.
But usually because they're very busy, very high-profile video game designers, they come in with like a PowerPoint.
Right.
Anyhow.
So Jason buried, was it like a board game with like solid gold pieces or something?
Okay. So... Sounds like you did not read the whole article.
I didn't read the article. You told me about it.
Jason Rohr designed a video game. He was careful never to play his video game, but he designed it. And as he's pitching, he was always careful to black out parts of the photos to make sure no one could ever play his game. He then programmed an artificial intelligence to play his game to make sure it was balanced, but he never played it himself. He then, after the game was finalized because it was balanced, because the AI had determined it as being balanced... He wrote all the rules on paper that would last thousands of years, whatever that would be, like non-acidic, blah, blah, blah. Put it in a vacuum-sealed glass tube and put that tube inside a titanium container. Also, all the instructions are pictographs because English won't exist in thousands of years.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Nor will writers.
Yeah. Only computers. Only computers speaking in pictographs.
Seriously.
And then he found every possible GPS coordinate that was 1 to 5 miles away from the freeways in the deserts of Nevada. He then randomly chose one of these GPS coordinates and buried the titanium cylinder containing the instructions, pictograph instructions of his game, at that spot. He then printed out 1 million coordinates that all have these qualities.
I think it was 10,000.
Huh?
I thought it was 10,000 coordinates.
An insane amount of coordinates.
Well, we're talking about like a factorial, or no, a factorial, yeah. Rather. Okay,
I believe 900 pieces of paper, and then handed those pieces of paper out to the audience in sealed envelopes. after his pitch, they had him open. And he was like, one of these coordinates is where I buried my game. So, I mean, we'll probably find it within 2,000 years, if my math's correct. And some people just
tore... Or if anybody gives a shit.
And some people just tore up their pieces of paper and threw them away. So...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's sort of a dick move, I guess.
I think it's bold. It means we're only going to find this game as erosion occurs. But really what it comes down to is this man has built the ultimate game for the future that no one will discover for thousands of years that no one has ever played before. And I think the fact that he executed and did it is the most baller thing.
I mean, I applaud the dickishness because God knows I salute that sort of attitude.
Well, should we know, Jason Royer is kind of a strange bird from what I understand. Like, he builds a lot of artsy 2D Flash games and then I think lives off the grid in, like, New Jersey.
How the fuck do you live off the grid in New Jersey?
Well, there's four.
The grid in Montana.
The Pine Barrens are there. I think he...
Rob actually grew up in the... You grew up in the forests of New Jersey, right?
Not the Pine Barrens, probably. That's my yeah, I'm not a piney, but as I say. I did grow up, not quite the sticks, but in sort of the...
Didn't you have your own go-kart track?
I did, actually.
Did anybody say something like go-kart track? The term off the grid?
That's
totally
not
off the
exactly
table.
A go-kart. Whatever, it's a long story. But anyway, yes, there were go-karts, and there was. But it was a horse farm. Point being was, yes, Jason's cool. He lives, I think, in Davis, actually, which isn't quite
he was self-sustaining. Like, he, like, pooped on his vegetables and only...
You can be
on
the grid and poop on your vegetables.
Yeah, seriously.
They're not mutually exclusive states.
I mean,
states,
he's clearly utilizing some aspects of the grid in programming video games on computers.
I thought that was done with, like, pedals and solar power.
Exactly, yes. It's all the Musée Mécanique, you know.
No, he did it all on punch cards with the punch card typewriter from earlier. No computers went into this computer game.
He's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy. He doesn't come off as particularly weird or anything.
Oh, I'm sure he's really nice.
Yeah, he's very tall. What you would say about Jason Moore is that he's very tall.
Just because somebody doesn't seem weird doesn't mean they're not weird.
No, he's not weird.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, he's kind
of... I agree with Logan.
He's kind of an artist. I mean, like, you know, he's got his own thing.
Yeah, no, totally. And he's obviously the most futuristic game designer we have, despite not making games about the future, except one that's buried in the desert somewhere.
Well, we don't know what's about the future. It might be about the present, which will be the past.
Castle Doctrine?
His home invasion game, the new one?
Castle Doctrine, right? Is the name of it?
Oh, Castle Doctrine. I think he said Castle Vossen or something.
Castle Vossen!
Jason Roth presents Castle Vossen. I'm like, what?
No, I have not.
It's cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How do you think he compares to Jonathan Blow, the other sort of indie game luminary dude?
I don't know. I mean, I actually know these. I know both of these people.
And you can't say anything native because you want to work with them. Yeah, I understand.
My writing partner worked on The Witness and is pretty good friends with Jason. So it's like, you know, that's how we have lunch and shit. You know, it's like, yeah, it's all very casual. John Blow's an intense, focused dude, and that game, what little I understand of it, is potentially going to be really, really, really amazing.
The Island one?
The Witness, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All right, guys. I think it's time to call it a day.
Agreed.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. Bye.